This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Today on Dreamland, we're going to have what I think could be described safely as a very unusual experience. We're going to be talking to someone about his work, and here's what some others have said about his work. Nick Pope, intriguing and sinister, fascinating. Peter Robbins, author, researcher, and international lecturer. Paul Sinclair, yet again, proves his worth. Well done. John Hansen, retired UK police detective. Paul is acknowledged as being a specialist in this field of investigation. Howard Hughes, a broadcaster and journalist, compelling and credible, a real investigator. Derek Taylor, author of the Alien Contact series, fascinating, informative, and painstakingly researched. And that's what we love on Dreamland, is real research. Somebody who goes out into the field and does the work, talks to the people, walks the walk, and does it. Paul Sinclair has been on Dreamland before, and subscribers, all you have to do is go to the search engine and input his name, and you'll find the previous shows, and they're going to be as fascinating as this, but he's made some serious breakthroughs, and we're going to have an interesting time today. Welcome to Dreamland, Paul.
Thank you very much, Whitley, and I'm looking forward to sharing a bit of information with you today.
Well, good. It's going to be more than a bit of information, folks. An Englishman's noted for their understatement, and that was an understatement. Anyway, now let's go back a little bit, because it's been a while since you've been on Dreamland. First, tell us a little bit about where you are and why that got you started.
I'm here in East Yorkshire on the coast of the United Kingdom. The actual location is Bridlington, to be exact, a small fishing town. And I've lived here for about 30 years. But I think I've been involved, or should we say immersed in the subject, for as long as I can remember, from childhood. You were kind enough to allow me to speak on the show a few years ago, and I spoke about a few of the things that happened to me, which are probably, well, they're not probably, these are the reasons why I'm so entrenched in the subject. From the earliest beginnings as a small boy, probably 5 or 6 years old, I can't remember, children don't keep diaries, but my father showing me a sphere of light in the neighbouring town about a mile away, and we watched it. He woke me up to show me this sphere of light, and it looked like it travelled along the rooftops of this small town called Mexborough. And to me, it looked like the moon moving along the rooftops. But the gist of the story is, Whitley, that after that, things happened. I'm not sure if that were the catalyst. I'm not sure. I really don't know. But I saw what I can only describe as, I'm reluctant to call them alien beings because I don't know where they come from, but beings visited me in my bedroom as a child up until about 14, 15 years old. And we're not talking nightly or even monthly, but I've got these snapshots, these cameos of memories that I struggle to get any further with. I run these quite terrifying memories through my mind, I would think, every night of my life, hoping I can get a little bit further, waking up in bed and looking at the curtains and seeing what I perceive as a small boy to be cow's eyes in the curtains. Now, why do I say cow's eyes? Because we're limited life experience at the field at the back of us in our house, where I lived in Old Denneby. This pasture had cows in it, and the only thing that I could relate to with an eye that big was a cow. And I'm looking at these eyes in the curtains, and the curtains were a silver grey colour. But then these things move out from the curtains, and they're either side of my bed. And they're not childhood imaginations. They're not dreams. I'm 56 years old now, and they've stayed with me from then to now. And there's so many things that I really can't get my head round, Whitley. For instance, the bed was at the side of the wall, yet they were either side of the bed. How the mechanics of this work, I don't know. Whether I'm getting some kind of false memory, you know probably as much about this as anybody in the world.
I do, all I can say is this. As my listeners know, researcher after researcher who comes on this show has an experience of some sort in their background. Just recently, Kathleen Martin and Ray Hernandez were on the show. Both of them were kind of activated, like I was, like Bud Hopkins was, by experiences. This presence looks for people who will do things that it needs done. And that's why you're here. I'm sure it's why most of us are here and why most of us are listeners are here. We are a little band of people who have had contact and are having it. And we're talking about what that means on this show. That's what it's about. It's a really special place. And one of the big reasons you're here is because of this foundation in your life. To me, it's a signal that the visitors, when I see something like this, the visitors want this person to be brought forward as best we can. Free Dreamlanders, sit up and take notice. Listen up. What you're going to hear right now is from a show from October of 2009, Dr. Ed Belbruno, for the first time ever, describing his extraordinary close encounter experience that led to so many changes in his life. Ed is an important scientist. He is the winner of the prestigious 2018 Humboldt Prize in Mathematics, and he is an extraordinary man. He is going to be part of our year-end Dreamland, updating us on his life. He is also prominently mentioned in my new book, A New World. You can't get anything like this anywhere else in this world or in a new world. Dreamland is absolutely unique. We rely absolutely on your subscriptions for our survival. If we don't get subscriptions, we will die. So go to unknowncountry.com, click on the subscribe tab. Now, listen to a little bit of what you are missing.
There it was. I put my engine off, turned my lights off, and there's my car facing this thing, probably maybe 100 feet away. And this was something which was very strange, you can imagine. I sat there for probably 10, 15 minutes staring at it with her, and suddenly it floated off of the ground. It lifted up. The entire black object with the red square in the middle lifted up, and it hovered over the road, maybe about 100 feet in the air. Not even that.
Join our subscriber section today. Click on the subscribe tab on unknowncountry.com to place your order.
I've been a subscriber to Unknown Country from almost the beginning. I get information there I can get nowhere else on the web.
Join us. You owe it to yourself. We're talking to Paul Sinclair, Truth Proof 3, Bringing Down the Light. You can find it on Amazon. He has also a Facebook page, Truth Proof. Truth Proof. Paul, that's a bit of a tongue twister. And a YouTube channel, Truth Proof. And so you can reach Paul in any number of ways and get the book, too. And there's some extraordinary illustrations in the book. Paul has gone down under for this thing, for sure. So, Paul, we were just, before we took the break, we were talking about your experiences as a child and how that kind of activated you. Now, tell us what happened next. I mean, you grow up, and these memories, do they remain with you or disappear for a while and come back? What happened?
The memories never left me, Whitley. Never, ever left me. And like, I'd love to be able to have recall of a full sequence of, let's call it an abduction, an event, but I haven't. I've got cameos, if that's what I'd prefer to call them, of waking up and seeing them, waking up in pain, literally pain. I mean, I can't explain. If anybody's ever laid on their arm and felt the arm go numb and then felt the life sort of trickle back into it, that's, as a child, that's the feeling that I used to have when I woke up and these things were around me. But I would think from about 14 years old, it died off. The contact died off. And I mean, like I've said previously, these things happened very intermittently. So I've probably only got about 12 memories from childhood. So, you know, we're not looking at lots and lots, but it was happening. I wonder how many I forgot. But then when I got into my 20s, I would have thought about 27 to 34, then things turned, well, they stepped up a gear. And I've got the medical records. I think it was you, Whitley, that said I ought to get them years ago. And I did say I'd send you some, and I will do it, because I didn't do, where the doctors are saying we're quite perplexed by the punch hole lesions that keep appearing on this young man's body. And I was tested for everything, and I knew what was happening. I knew what was doing it. But I just daren't go to the doctors and say, I woke up, we'll call it January 1994, because 94 to 97 seemed to be very active where they were interacting with me. And they're around me. And I'm in excruciating pain, and it feels like a knife's been pushed into my back. And you can feel almost like a corkscrew going round in your back. And you wake up the next morning, and I had forgotten about it until I sit on the edge of the bed. And my wife, Mary, says, Paul, I don't believe it. And says, what's that? She says, you've got three holes in your back.
Oh, my God.
These are like bullet wounds, Whitley. These aren't little scratches. The scarring, as there's a medical term for it, and listeners, I'm not medically trained, so you'll have to bear with me if I say it wrong, but they've healed with what's called giant foreign body cells, which implies that a surgical procedure has taken place. That's what they asked me at the hospital, because I've had biopsies done on them. It stopped. Everything stopped about 1998. But I can remember laid there, and these beings, whatever they were telling me that it was a bedspring turning round in my back. But why they'd say such a thing when you've got a nice comfortable bed? Nobody spoke audible through my ears. These things were being said inside my head. And I realise how crazy this must sound, listeners, talking about something like this, but I'm trying to be as honest as I can be. And three holes appeared in my back. They peppered all over my right arm, all over my left arm, throughout 94 to 97. And terrifying experiences. The guy over the road came over the night that the holes appeared in my back.
Can you explain that in a little more detail?
We live on a large Victorian terrace, in a large Victorian terrace. And at the opposite side of the road, you've got similar houses. Well, this guy, he doesn't sleep in bed. He's worked in a foundry, and he's got something wrong with his lungs, and he finds he has to sit up and sleep. And that's what he was doing downstairs in his front room, probably smoking, knowing Peter. But, I mean, we can't change that, which when you've got bad lungs is not really recommended. But he, during the night, in the early hours between 3 and 4 a.m., he claims that our house, all the rooms, this is what's interesting, because we've got four girls who were living at home at the time, and all those bedroom doors would have been shut. But he says all the rooms were lighting up like a welder's torch. It did it three times. Huge arc of blue and white, blue to white light. And he knocked on the door the next morning to ask if everything was okay. I was still in bed because it was a Saturday morning, because I work all week and I don't lay in as a rule, but, you know, 8 o'clock's a lay in for me. But Peter's knocking at the door, and one of our girls answered and said, you know, speak to my dad when he gets up later. Well, I'd already discovered what was happening as soon as I sat on the edge of the bed, and Mary said to me, I don't believe it, Paul. You've got three holes in your back. Oh, and by the way, Whitley, can you remember the old Polaroid Instamatic cameras that you just snap a picture and one comes out?
Sure.
We took a picture of them that morning. My wife got the camera and took a picture of these holes in my back. The doctor, our family doctor, when I went to the doctors, I went from there to have a biopsy on them. She's drawn on the medical records like a little diagram of the punch hole lesions. And you know what? It happened. I can't prove what I'm saying. I think that's the difficulty we all face with this. This phenomena is always one step ahead of, it seems to, well, not one step, probably 10, 20, 1,000, everything we think and do. And just when you think you've got a handle on it, just when you think you might know what's happening, something else occurs and throws you off in another direction. I really don't know what they were doing. I don't know what the purpose of doing these procedures on me were, Whitley. But thank God it stopped about 1998. But it still put me on this path that you spoke about earlier, where I'm literally switched on. Since I packed in work at the age of 48, listeners, I've not got loads of money, but we're comfortable enough that I don't have to do a 9-to-5. But this now, it's not just a 9-to-5. This is like, I don't know, 16, 17-hour days. I'm interviewing witnesses. I'm all over the place gathering information for the books, and hopefully something might occur or somebody might tell me something that will, solve a little bit of the mystery that's in my head for my own problems.
You know what I think sometimes when this stuff happens, these physical things happen to us, I think it's intended to test us and to fire us up. In some cases, it just freezes a person. They're ossified with hate. I know of some people who have died basically because of being unable to cope with this stuff. And yet other people are tremendously energized by it, like I was, frankly, and you and so many others, like Bud Hopkins was. He spent the rest of his life. He had an experience on a beach of this thing coming toward him, and he spent the rest of his life working on it, as you will, as I am.
That's the truth of it, Whitley. And you personally and myself and the people that you just spoke about, Bud Hopkins, they don't need somebody to try and convince them that this might be something else, or are you mistaken? Because you've seen it up close and personal, and once you've seen it, you can't unsee it. These aren't hallucinations or, so I don't know, whatever term you want to call it. This is real, and I think just because science or academia can't understand it, can't get their head round it, does not mean it's not happening. You've got all these people from all walks of life going back decades, hundreds and hundreds of years, reporting similar things. This phenomena, this subject, in every shape and form that it hits us in, is real. I don't have to tell you that. I know you know.
Oh, no. It's real, all right, and it is just as strange as it seems, and we have not yet plumbed the depths of the strangeness, I'm sure. Free Dreamlanders, we're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going deeper down this tunnel, and there are tunnels actually involved in the story later on. We'll be right back.
Whitley Strieber became the host of Dreamland in 1998, and he's still the host today. One of the first podcasts, Dreamland has been built into the premier program of its kind, exploring the edge of science and reality. The show's archive on unknowncountry.com dates back to 2004. Dreamland is a treasure unique in the world.
At this point in this commercial, I used to say that you can't subscribe because we are still in our old website, but that has changed at last. UnknownCountry.com's new website is available. Go to UnknownCountry.com and take a look. It is beautiful. It offers a huge archive, weekly chats, a free message board, all kinds of great stuff. Whitley Strieber audiobooks for subscribers, and much, much more. New stuff coming on the site all the time. So go to unknowncountry.com, take a look, and really open your mind. How do you do that? By subscribing and exploring and having a great time.
Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com. A new world is coming. Whitley has just finished his book about what it's like to live with and communicate with the visitors. He's been doing this for the past 30 years, and since 2015, the intensity of it has exploded. Over the next few months, he'll be reading from it for subscribers prior to publication. So be among the first to know what living with them is really like and what it will be like for more and more of us in the future. A New World, Unforgettable.
We're talking to Paul Sinclair. His new book, Truth Proof 3. You know, I think that it could be that Texans just can't say that. Anyway, it's Truth Proof 3. You can join him on his YouTube channel, Truth Proof. Okay, I'm just not going to try anymore. You can join him on his YouTube channel, folks. You know what it's called. You can join him on Facebook, also on Truth Proof. Thank goodness I don't have to read this for audible.com or something. Anyway, now let's go back to you're energized. You know this is real. And the area you're living in draws your attention. Why did it do that?
Well, first of all, like I've just spoke about previously, at the age of 48, I packed in work. I'd always had I've never had the time, but I'd always got in the back of my mind, I'm going to write about this. I'm going to research this. And over the years, I'd seen the news articles about the missing people that were vanishing up at Bempton. I'd seen the articles about the alien big cats. When I say alien, listeners, I mean alien to the UK, you know, because we don't have panthers. And in some instances, there's been lions reported, which is an impossibility, I think we all know, because an apex predator would be seeing carnage. But nevertheless, they were reported. And I decided to start looking in archives, and I were looking in archives in Beverley. I realised that these places won't mean a lot to you, but it's towns close to where I live, and Bridlington and Scarborough, and went through absolutely decades of archives, microfilm, decades and decades of it, and discovered that this area, and I dare say that other areas, if other researchers want to work as hard, it's a multi-phenomena area. Every type of unexplained phenomena seems to be and has presented in this area at some time or another. But what's interesting, Whitley, is that location is key. Certain locations produce more phenomena. It's almost like throwing a stone into a pool and the ripples go out and you've got traces of the unexplained, traces of the phenomena on the outer edges. But once again, the actual hub of the activity, certain places do produce it. There's a small lane, absolutely uninteresting lane, no trees either side of it, called Short Lane, and it runs between Bempton and Bridlington. Unbelievably, black panthers have been sighted on Short Lane since the 1990s, the 1970s, the 90s, this year. And why is this lane producing the sightings of this panther? It produces UFO sightings. When I say produces, you know, we've got witnesses who talk about seeing unidentified flying objects, but on Short Lane. The newspaper articles from 2006 stated that they were looking for the deer butcherers, where roe deer had been found on Short Lane. Once again, this lane is probably not even three quarters of a mile long. And unusually, they were looking for people who'd butchered these unfortunate animals, pared all the meat off the bone in an unusual manner, but not took the meat. So we know it's not some kind of active carnivore, that like a fox or a badger, it's been carefully pared off the bone in an unusual way and the meat hasn't been taken. Well, probably 3 weeks ago, I was alerted to a deer carcass. I think I've got it actually on the Truth Proof page now. Where was it found? At the junction of Short Lane, roe deer stag, 4-inch hole where its ear used to be, down to the bone. That was the right ear, gone. The left ear had been sliced completely off and its genital area had been removed. I'm sorry for sounding macabre, listeners, but, you know, this is happening. And I checked this carcass. There's no signs of trauma anywhere else, as in a bullet or dogs. And we're talking probably about the fastest animal that we've got in the United Kingdom. And this jumps onto the stories from 2016, 17 and 18, where on the fields very close to the cliff tops at Bempton, at livestock were being mutilated. And there's no nice way of saying it. These animals, whatever was responsible for the deaths of these animals, in most instances, just chose to strip the skin off its face, remove the eyes, and remove the ears. In odd cases, and it was the farmer that noted this, because I did contact the farmer, and we did work together, and we purely on the basis that I were looking into it to see what was happening to these animals. Not everything has to be unexplained as in paranormal. And I think as a researcher, and you'll probably agree, Whitley, we've got to look for the plausible before we can look actually to the inconceivable. But that's where we ended up at. And sorry, I'll jump back. The farmer noted that if a leg was missing, it was always a front left leg. Why, I don't know. But in the process of 2 years, 50 fully grown ewes, 70 kilo ewes, were killed in this manner or a very similar manner to what I've described. And I found most of them, me personally, because I was walking that what we've called the affected area in between 4:30 and 6 a.m. Trying to get to what was actually happening to these animals. And I never did. The police were involved, by the way, because I'm sure there'll be listeners here thinking, how could that many animals go missing and nobody knows about it? First of all, you've got to understand that these farmers were in a small area here in Bempton and Flamborough. I think there's only 1,000 people in the village, and they're very close. They don't share things easily, and I've been fortunate to actually work alongside a few of these people, and they've been kind enough to let me investigate and work on the land, because I've never disclosed where the actual locations are, Whitley, because they wouldn't take kindly to having their land used as a thoroughfare. But jumping back to it, I mean, one of the farmers, I went one morning and there was a roe deer. It had been in the field with the sheep for a number of weeks. A wild deer, and it kept its distance, and I did my usual walk and sweep of the fields, and as I'm coming back, the farmer's walking up to meet me, and he says, the roe deer's over there by the kissing gate, it's dead. And obviously I'd missed it because I'd come in at another gate. We went and looked at this deer, which had its eyes removed and its muzzle stripped of flesh. Nothing else wrong with it. But what the farmer said, and what I found interesting, he said, I was laid in bed last night. Now, this is in the middle of nowhere, listeners. There's no street lights. There's no other farms, no curtains. This is what I'm getting at. He said, I was listening to music, and there was a light moving around on my bedroom wall. And I mean, I couldn't believe it. I says, well, what did you do? And he says, I don't know. He said, I just laid there, just looked at it. And I thought, well, maybe there's a process at work here. Maybe the light did subdue him. But what the point I'm getting at, we can't link A to B, as in the light to the deer. But I think there's a strong possibility that there's a connection there, because the next morning we've got this roe deer stag in the prime of its life, the fastest animal in the UK, probably. And it's found there, eyes removed, muzzle stripped. And we've got that combination. I mean, we've got another story, but it's jumping back to 2007. And I don't know how you want to work this with the stories from the book, Whitley. But it's an interesting one. And it's a lady called Elaine. That's her real name. I spoke to her this year. And she's actually on our documentary, Bringing Down the Light. We've filmed her telling this story. And she was travelling home. She lived on the East Yorkshire Wolds, which will be about 11 miles from where I'm sat now. Inland. And these are the places, Whitley, where I was filming what we've called the intelligent light forms, the spheres of light, back right. In the 2006-2007. So it's 2007.
Now, folks, just to backtrack just for a second, you're going to have to listen to his earlier shows to understand what he's talking about with the spheres of light. There is so much. Paul has so much that we simply can't backtrack for everything. Go ahead, Paul.
I do apologize, listeners, because in 2006-2007, I had a website called ILF UFO, Intelligent Light Forms, because we were filming spheres of light, these orange and yellow spheres of light out on the East Yorkshire Wolds and out over the sea, and there definitely seems to be some kind of awareness to the lights. So jumping back to Elaine's story from March 2007, this lady's driving home along a single track road to a village called Hoggart. All these places could be looked at in Google Earth, so you'll see where we are and you'll see the remoteness of the locations. And as she's driving along this remote lane at approximately 9 to 9.30 at night, she becomes aware of 10 to 12 orange lights above the hedgerow as she's approaching. And, you know, she can't see anything and no beams of light, just these orange spheres of light. But she does the logical thing. She does the thing that we all do. And she's thinking, oh, well, there'll be somebody around there with torches. There's going to be people. I don't know why. I don't know what they're doing at this time of night. But the next thing she knows, as she rounds the corner, she sort of literally runs into almost a herd of deer. When we say a herd, 10 to 12 roe deer, and the lights are above the roe deer. She describes them as looking vibrant and very bright, but not casting any light like a torch beam would. She said they're only just above the deer's head, and her exact words, they seem to be herding them. She says, I'm looking for people and I can't see people. She says, and she's processing all this in a matter of seconds because in order to avoid hitting the deer, she swerves off the road and crashes a car down a bank and goes running down into the bottom of a field. As I say, we've got her filmed account in the documentary. She said, the car came to a stop between some hedges, two hedges, and I couldn't get out of the door or the passenger door. And I looked up the field and the lights were coming down towards me. And she's still thinking it's people. She said, oh, great. She said, I'm going to get some help. She said, but nobody came. She said, in the end, I climbed over the seat and I got out of one of the other doors. She said, but suddenly it's dark. She said, it weren't dark. It weren't pitch black. She said, I just couldn't understand it. She said, I tried to ring my husband. She said, I know I had a full charge on my phone. The phone was dead. She said, I was 10 minutes from home and it took me over an hour to get home and I can't account for that time. Now, I think there, Whitley, what we've got there is a good example in Elaine's story of the lights certainly interacting with livestock. It's the first story I've heard where there's been such close contact. But, I mean, she thinks that the deer were almost not hypnotized, because bearing in mind, these are wild animals. They're very skittish. You rarely see more than two or three together at a time. And she said there were 10 or 12. And these lights literally were just above their heads. And obviously she processed this in a matter of seconds and ended up crashing her car. But quite an incredible story, really. And the lights seem prominent in, I wouldn't say everything that I'm looking at, but you can usually find some correlations. You can usually find that somebody said, oh, yeah, we saw some strange lights off the cliff tops and this had happened. You know, obviously I'm looking for this, and I don't think any researchers, and I don't mean I'm unique, but I don't think any researchers in the area I'd actually looked to see what else was happening in conjunction with other unexplained events, because it's almost as though when one thing happens, the whole area begins to unfold. But everything, Whitley, is so detached from the other that nobody actually wants to try. Well, nobody conceives that it could be connected, but there seems to be some invisible thread running through it all. In my head, that's how it's looking anyway.
Three Dreamlanders, listen up and help us get to the point where we have no breaks. Do that by subscribing to unknowncountry.com. And subscribers, tell your friends about it, because it's so special. It's so unique in the world. There's nothing like this anywhere else. And it's vitally important, quite frankly. We'll be right back.
When should you subscribe to unknowncountry.com? How about right now? Go to unknowncountry.com and click on the subscribe tab on the masthead. We offer subscriptions either by credit card or PayPal, either automatic renewal or annual or longer subscriptions without auto renew. Plus, it's easy to cancel if you wish. Do it right in your account.
And do we ever need you right now? And do you ever need us? The new unknowncountry.com is beautiful. It is fully functional. The whole archive is working. It's full of amazing stuff. Plus, This is the only place like it in the world. Keep it going. It's up to you. Go to unknowncountry.com. You know what you have to do. It's only a few pennies a day. It's not a big sacrifice, but it means an awful lot.
There are hundreds of charitable organizations in the world, but you have to have a sharp eye to be sure your money is going to where it's needed and not into the pockets of overpaid administrators. That's why Whitley Strieber and UnknownCountry.com support the Mercy Corps. It's non-sectarian, it's lean and efficient, and it goes everywhere on earth that people are in need. When you contribute, you can be sure that most of your dollar goes right to the homeless, the starving, and the desperate. Go to Unknown Country and click on the Mercy Corps Foundation ad on the left side of your homepage. A $10 gift can put food on a child's plate and shoes on his feet. Unknown Country and Whitley Strieber receive no compensation from the Mercy Corps.
Whitley Strieber's nonfiction is magical, powerful, and thought-provoking. From communion to the afterlife revolution, there is no body of work like it in the world. Nothing even approaches it. And not only that, his wonderful fiction, from The Wolfen to his latest novel, New, offers reading and listening entertainment that you will never forget. And where do you find all this in one place? At Strieber.com. That's where. Every Whitley Strieber book available for sale is there. So don't wait. Go to Strieber.com and start exploring. There's only one Whitley and only one place to find all his work. Strieber.com. Earthfiles.com is Linda Moulton Howe's great website, offering news of the edge of science and reality. Keep up with Linda's work every single day on earthfiles.com.
We're talking to Paul Sinclair. His new book, Truth Proof 3, Bringing Down the Light, UFOs and Other Anomalies Around East and North Yorkshire and Beyond. And way beyond, it sounds, Paul. You can reach Truth Proof on Facebook and on YouTube. So get involved in this fascinating and remarkable story. Now, we've been talking about the cattle mutilations that took place in this region and lights coming down. And, you know, it's an interesting and unique area, and there are a lot of other stories, and Paul has assembled a group of them for us to tell us about. And then later, we're going down into some tunnels, which are eerily related to triangular UFOs. We're going to have a real journey later in the show. So, and by the way, if you're not a subscriber, one way to find out what that journey is to become one. So, Paul, why don't you, now let's go to the stories.
Yeah, I'd love to. And these are, some of them are historic but recent, and I can guarantee listeners that you'll never have heard any of these before. But they're well researched. I've spoke to the witnesses face to face, and yeah, I'll start here. Very close to where I live is a place called Flamborough, 3 miles away, and adjoining Flamborough is a place called Thornwick Bay. The name's Viking, and on November the 30th, 2013, two security guards had an incredible encounter in the early hours of the morning on the cliff tops at Thornwick Bay. They were in charge of security for a geological survey that was being conducted on the cliff tops. We've got the exact date. However, got the exact date, this guy put on his Facebook the morning that he finished his night shift. It was like War of the Worlds at work last night. And he's still got it on his Facebook from 2013. Now, these guys, there were two porter cabins on the cliff top, and I don't know what the equipment they were overlooking or safeguarding, but there's two porter cabins adjoining each other, full of equipment, and that's where they were this particular night. Approximately 2 in the morning, they became aware of a strange sound. Now, it were coming from all around them. There's nothing in the area. There's a holiday camp about a quarter of a mile away, but this is November. It would have been closed. There's no holidaymakers in the UK use these camps in November. And the strange thing about this, the sound made them feel frightened. That was his exact words. He said that it reverberated everything inside them. So anybody who's been to a rock concert and listened to an heavy bass and sort of felt their internal organs, well, that's what they said that this sound was able to do. They could feel the heart. They could feel things separate inside themselves. But it wasn't loud, but that it's some kind of infrasound that was doing it. And the but it was everywhere. And he's sort of talking to me, and he says, and the next thing he said, a light came through the cabin window. And there's a window at the end of the porter cabin. There's one to the right-hand side and one to the left, and the other cabin's the same. And these cabins were joined to make it look like one through office. He said, but it came through one window, and it sort of poured through. That's the way he described it. He said, and we'd got this extreme fear. The light was almost silver white. We could see each other. We were talking, but we could hardly hear each other, even though the sound that they could hear wasn't loud. And they were terrified, absolutely terrified. So when the light penetrated the cabin window, and they think it lasted for about 5 minutes, and eventually the sound retracted, and so did the light. But that wasn't the end of it. Outside the cabin, I mean literally outside, they said, and you know, I stood with this guy and I said, well, what do you mean outside? He said, there, 6 foot away. He said it was outside in front of us, like a big blue luminous dome. Now, when I spoke to him, he was already working on security, and you know the barriers that go up to let your cars through, they're approximately 17 foot high. And because I said, can we have an approximate size of this? He said, well, it was higher than them barriers. And, you know, obviously he's not talking about that, but he's giving me his idea. So the barriers were 17 foot and it was as wide as the two porter cabins. And it's a huge luminous sphere on the cliff tops. Now, once again, we've only got these guys' words for this, but we've got another incredible piece of phenomena that's occurred. Now, listeners, I'm not trying to say this is responsible, but interestingly, this is November the 30th, 2013. But interestingly, on November the 4th, 2004, a man vanished on the clifftops within half a mile of that location. I'm giving you examples. I'm not saying A is responsible for B because I just couldn't possibly do that. But that's what happened. But what also is interesting, 2013, in less than a month later, another man vanished at Bempton, which is 2 miles away from where this 2013 sphere appeared. I know people are probably thinking, well, is he imagining that the lights are responsible? I'm not really, but I'm just pointing out that unusual things of a totally different nature were happening as well. And this is what I'm saying, is there an invisible thread running through it all? So eventually this light, he said there was a huge flash of light and it just vanished, and they were left absolutely dumbfounded. Now, the CCTV on the holiday camp, because they went and looked at this, did pick it up. And it showed the blue sphere. And unfortunately, because you're probably hoping I'm going to say we've got the footage, he took it and had it on his phone for ages, but he's changed his phone. No. So I can't. Yeah, no, incredible, because that would have been quite a sighting. I mean, initially, Whitley, I went to speak to these guys because he'd seen the spheres of light over the sea. And he allowed me to record him for both accounts. But I said, is there anything else? And he said, off the record. And when I spoke to him, he gave me this story of the porter cabins and the light that terrified them. But obviously, it's not off the record. He knows I'm going to speak about it. He just knows I'm not going to put his name out or jeopardize his credibility, basically, because that's how he would feel about it, I think, you know. But so that's just one story. But, I mean, we'll stay with Thornwick Bay. And in August of 2019, Whitley, and we've got a cryptid report. And there's an holidaymaker called Ian who's contacted me. We've Skyped several times, and we Skyped a few weeks ago. I'm going to actually meet him when he comes back to the area. And he wanted to, bearing in mind, he's become intrigued after the experience. So he's looked online, he's been looking at things similar to what he's seen, and found my name and a bit of research. So that's why he's contacted me. And he's walking the cliff tops at 10 p.m. at night. And they're a lonely place. They are absolutely desolate. And he said he'd got a four-pound torch with him, a cheap torch, nothing else. And he's describing the area, and he's walking from Thornwick Bay towards Bempton. And he describes seeing a carving on the cliff tops. Well, I know where that is. Interestingly, it's quite close to where the animal mutilations were taking place. And this is the August the 29th. He said, and he is a large animal, raw. And yeah, that's his words. He said, it sounds like a dog. He said, but if it were a dog, it would have been as big as a bear. He said, and then he heard two roars, and then he heard a sheep cry out in the darkness. He said, I stood listening, holding nothing more than my cheap torch. Then he said, there's a banking. Well, he didn't know what the banking was, Whitley, but that's Dane's Dyke. That's an ancient earthwork. It's about 4 to 5 miles long, and it's Neolithic. So it's 3,600-year-old earthwork that runs and divides Flamborough from Bridlington. And it's quite remote. So he said, I saw a torch moving along the banking, a light. He said, and I thought, oh, he says, because I was frightened after I heard this animal. He said, I thought, this guy's lost a dog, and he must be looking for it. He said, so I sort of went towards it and went up onto the banking, and there's nothing there. He said, then I realised that the light wasn't casting a beam or projecting a beam. Now, he's not attached much to that, but I find that really interesting. So we'd established the location, Whitley, and then as he's walking, the cliffs around this area range between 200 to 420 foot, and the sheer drops. But in places, there's a bit of a rolling bank down to them, about 50 foot before you drop off the end. And he says he saw the outline, huge outline and huge shoulders of some figure. He said, I could see it in the darkness between the sort of sky and the sea. He said, but it slowly just sank down to the floor. He said, I just froze. Said, and I went back the other way. He says, I went back a darker, more frightening way than past this thing. So quite what he's seen, I don't know. But that's another story from August the 29th of this year. But it doesn't stop there. If do you want me to stay with the cryptids for a moment, Whitley?
Yeah, but, you know, I just have a brief comment here about the cryptids, and that is the relationship between hearing the sheep and seeing this creature, and the strange way the sheep are mutilated. It strikes me as being it possible that this is an animal from another level of reality or dimension or even another planet, for all I know. And this is the way its predation looks. And then that makes me think to myself, what if we're missing the boat with all of the cattle mutilations that take place and are taking place right now, in fact, in the United States, and that these are being done by animals from some other dimension, not by aliens and flying saucers at all. It's a fascinating possibility, but Free Dreamlanders, we're finally coming up on our last brief begging session. So subscribe and don't listen to it any more. And subscribers, please tell your friends, this is worth it. We'll be right back.
Ever wonder what the close encounter experience is all about? Think you know what it's about? When you open Whitley and Ann Strieber's Immortal Communion Letters, you're going to experience a whole new vision. Not something being told to us by researchers and theorists, but the actual testimony of people who came face to face with this unknown. Unforgettable. And the book is only $3.99 at Strieber.com.
We're talking to Paul Sinclair. His new book, Truth Proof 3, Bringing Down the Light, UFOs and Other Anomalies Around the East and North Yorkshire and Beyond. And as I've said before, far, far beyond. You can reach Paul on Facebook. He has his Facebook page is Truth Proof. You can go to him also, the same name, on YouTube. Okay, Paul, let's get back into it then. How do you respond to that possibility, that comment that I just made?
Well, I think I'm really pleased you brought that up because I might have forgot to mention that. I'm absolutely on the same page as you here because here in the UK, Whitley, I don't think that we have the landmass to support something like I've just described. Plus the fact that with the sheep mutilations and the deer mutilations, in most instances, no meat is being taken. The killings are purely being done to remove the eyes, the ears, the throat's being taken out, absolutely tore out, but there's very little, well, no blood. No blood. We must understand, listeners, and I know it's a macabre thing to say, but a sheep basically is a dirty white colour. And if something had gone to the ferocity of removing its throat, there would be blood splats all over the fur.
Everywhere, yeah.
But what you've said about possibly interdimensional in nature is exactly what I'm thinking, because if we're on Radio 1, these things could be on Radio 2, and these areas where we've said location is key could be thin areas. They could be all around the world, such as Skinwalker, the place that I'm researching, Bempton, areas where there's something unique to the area that's allowing this phenomena to break through. Because I don't believe for one second that the United Kingdom has the landmass to support what would be an apex predator, be it such as what I've just described, as in the werewolf-type phenomena, or the alien big cat, the panther. I mean, back in 1994, 21 armed police officers, helicopters from RAF Leconfield, were all up searching for a lion at a place called Waldgate, literally 3 miles from where I'm sat now. It was seen over a period of weeks by numerous witnesses, and obviously the reports and the accounts were serious enough to set all these armed police officers and military helicopters up looking for this thing. But guess what? The lion just dissipated. The lion disappeared. Nobody heard another thing about it after that. But we were in an area, Waldgate, where the cats are reported, as in the panthers. The lion were a one-off. That were 1994. But as in the panthers, almost every couple of years, for a few weeks, people report seeing a panther. And we're not talking about one-off sightings. We're talking about multiple sightings. Now, I'd like to tell you about another interesting cryptid sighting from Bempton, which is very close to Flamborough and Thornwick Bay, where we've discussed previously.
Right, and we're going to be talking, folks, about Bempton in the third half hour a lot. Go ahead.
Excellent. Well, I've called this the three-para werewolf. Now, there's two guys who'd gone to do some wild camping at Bempton. They weren't familiar with the area, but they like to go to remote places and do this. They're both X3 para, as in paratroopers. And they were there, and the exact date is February the 7th, 2019. And the guys I speak to regularly, I've spoke to him today, is called Rob. I didn't know him before this story. Listeners, we've done a documentary called Bringing Down the Lighter, but we've done another one which is on YouTube for everyone to watch called The Bempton Phenomena. This guy contacted me after watching the Bempton phenomena, and he said to me, I've seen something from a nightmare. Took a bit of getting actually into the guy's head. We exchanged quite a lot of messages before we spoke, but we've done that now, and we speak regularly. So that is February the 7th. They've parked in the RSPB, the Bird Sanctuary car park, and they've walked down to the cliff tops. And they've set up camp, and then they're going to do a bit of a walk in between 3 and 4 in the morning. Once again, this is the bewitching hour, because things seem to happen. It happened for me personally in between 3 and 4 lots of times, but they're there. They've took two dogs with them. One's a terrier, and he described the other one as being a Patterdale cross Staffordshire Bull Terrier. Basically, the little working dogs, and I don't know what they were doing, but they were walking these cliff tops. Now, they're walking towards Flamborough Head, And both men have also remarked, Whitley, that the night felt prickly. The hairs on their arms were stuck up. It felt electric, but they didn't attribute any paranormal activity to it. They're not into paranormal activity.
But you know, a lot of people experience that during these things. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, his words were, he said, it just felt off. And he said to me, he said, Paul, he says, if you ever go there and you feel that, he says, because you're going to bump into this, mate. He said, you're going to see this. He said, because you go there that much, he said, don't go if it ever feels like that. So he said, he also remarked that the dogs stayed by their sides. His words were, they wouldn't work, as in run around the fields and do stuff. So the dogs wouldn't move. He said it was freezing hard. You know, the sky were quite clear, but there was ice on the grass. But early into the walk, they shone their torch beam down the cliff tops and they lit a pair of yellow eyes up. His words, as big as golf balls, forward-facing yellow eyes. Now, there were a few expletives, and we won't swear on this show because I don't, but you can guess what they've said, and they're thinking, what was that? And these guys, they've seen conflict, they've been in war zones, you know, as part of being paratroopers, Iraq and different places, plus their job now, or their pursuit now of wild camping. They know what deer look like, badger and fox in the torch beam. They didn't know what these yellow eyes were. So they carried on walking, discussing what they could have been, because this thing just turned away. And there's still a good distance and it's still very dark. Now, me and Bob Brown saw similar eyes throughout 2016, 2017, Whitley. Now, what's interesting, and we documented that in Truth Proof 3, what's interesting, we didn't know about the sheep mutilations until late 2016. And these eyes were being seen in close proximity to where the mutilations were taking place. But we'll jump back to the guys. So they're looking at, they're sort of walking down and discussing what it could have been. And they get a little bit further down and describes, see, he said, we came to what looked like a viewing platform. Well, I know exactly where he is. And you listeners can look at this. If you look from Google Earth and look at Bempton Cliffs, and you'll see the viewing platforms where people come in the daytime to take pictures and look at the seabirds, because there's a big gannet colony. He said, and then we saw two gate posts with no gate on them, like narrow, about 40 inch apart, just in the middle of nowhere. They do look a bit ridiculous, really, because I don't even think there's a fence either side of the gatepost. He said, but we lit these eyes up again. He said, but they didn't act like an animal. They didn't act like a rabbit caught in the headlights or a fox. These things just sort of looked and lazily turned away. So we just carried on walking, and then we came to the gatepost. And we shone the light to our right as we went through these gateposts without a gate. He says, and there it was, 20 foot away from them. He says, and my heart, he says, just jumped. He said, I couldn't believe it. He says, his words were, it was hunkered down. And at first they thought it looked like a hyena. He said, and it had a huge hump on its back and its fur was bristling. It was showing us its teeth.
Good God.
Seriously,
that would have been very exciting to see that in the field in the dark.
But this guy's been kind enough to allow me to record him, Whitley. And I don't know if any of your listeners want to go on YouTube and look at my presentation at the Awakening Conference in Manchester this year. The recording is played. This guy is actually telling us. And he said we couldn't believe it. He said, and it's hunkered down and its fur's all bristling on its back. It's like a dark come chocolate brown colour. He says the dogs absolutely, and once again he swore, were frightened to death. He says the tails were touching their bellies. He said, and we just didn't know what we were looking at. He says, and then it stood up. He said, it stood up. So this thing is on two legs. I asked him how big. He said it was 7 foot tall. He said, mate, it was 7 foot tall. He said it was broad. I asked him if it had a dog-type chest or clavicles like me and you would have, Whitley. And he said it had shoulders like a man would have. Unusually long arms that were actually, he said, looked too long for it. And he said it took a step. Now, as I'm talking to him and recording and playing the recording, I'm trying to he talked about its ears briefly, and I said, "Well, the ears stuck up, and he's in the moment. He can't even hear what I'm saying." He said, "It took one step towards us." He says, "And we've got the torch on it." He says, "And we just don't know what to do. Its chest, its front is a creamy white colour." And he says, "He's got these long arms with hands and claws on the ends of the hands, which don't seem feasible for a predator, really, does it?" But, you know, the thin arms. I asked him how much he thought it weighed, and he estimated it would have been about 300 pounds. I said, "What did you do?" He says, we just backed away. We literally just backed away. Now, Rob is of the belief that this thing thought that there was only one of them, because he said to me, in his exact words, and he said, "Lion or tiger?" I said, "When you say hunkered down, what do you mean?" He says, "It were crouched. It were like it were ready to pounce, like you see a tiger or a lion do." He says, "But I think that it thought there were only one of us." He says, "I honestly believe that if I'd have been on my own or just been one person, that thing would have took us out." He says, "It could have done anyway." Now, he wants to come back to the cliffs and walk through it with me. He lives in about 4 hours away. Now, he'll not mind me saying he's very ill at the moment, this guy, and that's why I speak to him most days, but I know he's going to make the effort to come back. Now, there were certain things in his report that when he gave it to me that made me think he were absolutely on the level as regards his illness and everything. It was just an incredible, incredible report. But there you go, listeners. I mean, you don't have to take my word for it. But what we've got to understand is that all these are genuine accounts from people who've got absolutely no connection to each other, yet they're telling stories that are absolutely incredible. And once again, Whitley, when you talked about the interdimensional element of this, I think to myself, you've hit it on the head here. You've got the nail on the head, because I can't think of any other way that these creatures could exist. And so we've got the account from I forgot the month, but I think it was August of this year, and then we've got the February the 7th one, the three paras, and I just don't know what to make of it. I mean, during 2016, 2017, myself and Bob Brown were in a very similar area.
Tell us a little bit about who Bob is.
Bob Brown is he's 71, Bob, and he needs absolute commending for his dedication and his guts, really. I mean, he's a little guy. He's only about 5'2", and he's so game. He's so, "Are we going up to Bempton?" He'll want to go tonight, or any day at week. If I ring him and said, "Do you want to go up there?" And he'll have a run up, and we'll spend hours and hours up there. He runs a radio show called Beacon of Light Radio. And Bob's famous saying when we were on the cliff tops was, "Eyes on us." And sure enough, we'd shine these powerful torch beams. And on the distant hillside, and I'm not going to say in exactly the same place, but in a similar place every time, there's these two huge yellow eyes staring back at us. One night I walked over to them. There was nothing there when I got there. Bob's protesting in the background, saying, "Come back, come back." I must realise now that I was probably stupid, but in view of what Rob, the paratrooper, told me, because it has made me think twice. And then we've got the other guy who saw this huge dark shape lower down onto the cliffs. And, right, you know, there's something there. There's something real to this.
It's like there's, as you said earlier, there's a kind of a thinning of the barrier between the worlds, like there is on the Skinwalker Ranch, or in fact on the Pine Ridge Reservation, which I was on a few months ago and had a remarkable experience, which I've already described to my listeners, and which is discussed in detail in my book, A New World. But this is like an invasion of these things. Free Dreamlanders, we have come to the end of our time together. And I am so sorry to say goodbye, because we are headed to a remarkable place that Paul very appropriately calls Terror Firma. You will not have been to any place like this before. All over the area that Paul was activated years ago by the good guys to research and to tell us about, there are all kinds of anomalies, and the darkest of the dark are at a place, an RAF base. We've talked about it a little bit before, earlier Dreamlands. You can get more detail if you want by going to those older shows. But we're going to go deep now, and I mean deep today, because we have to. The dark side is real, and it is served basically by some very foolish and arrogant people, a lot of them in uniform. Think about that. Okay, goodbye, free Dreamlanders. Subscribers, we'll just keep on keeping on.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host. And I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.